B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's 4:05 in the afternoon. Hour number 3, Felger and Mads here on a reentry Monday. Brought to you by East Boston Savings Bank. Back to your phones here in a second. I just want to weigh in quickly on a little story out in San Francisco. George Kittle, the great tight end there, has one more year left on his contract, and he and the Niners have started to talk contract extension, and they are far apart. They're at an impasse. I don't know if you're looking at a holdout or if, you know, he's doing any of that, but they're just talking about extending him now, and they're not close. His agent, Jack Bechta, told the NFL Network, quote, "I don't care about the tight end market. I'm being paid to do a George Kittle deal." So what he's saying is that he's looking for more than a deal that makes Kittle the highest paid tight end. He's not interested in tight end money. Here's another guy who wants wide receiver money, and we've seen this over the years. We saw it with Gronkowski. Gronkowski's people and Rosenhaus tried to make the same case that he's not just a normal tight end. He has a production of a receiver, and so he should be paid like a receiver, not a tight end. And I know I felt strongly about it at the time with Gronkowski. I feel the same way about George Kittle. And I would say this if I were the San Francisco 49ers. As great of a player as you are and as important as you are to our offense, pound sand. You're a tight end. You want receiver money? Lose 40 pounds, gain about a half a second on your 40 time, and line up outside the numbers. Then you'll get paid receiver money because that's what receivers are. You're a tight end. Sorry, dude. That's what you are, and you're great. Now, George Kittle, to me, has the right to ask to be the highest paid tight end in the history of football. Not that he's the best tight end in the history of football, but it's all about timing, right? He's had a couple of great years. He's up. And now it's your turn. And that's just the way it works. So if the agent said, we want to be paid higher than any tight end's ever been paid, I think he has the right to do that. And if I'm the Niners, I make him the highest paid tight end ever. But to make him and pay him like a receiver? No. You're a tight end. I'm not going to set that precedent. I never blame the Patriots for doing the same thing with Gronkowski. They could have paid him more as a tight end, but I never felt they should have paid him as a receiver, nor should the Niners pay Kittle as a receiver.
Yeah, and they shouldn't. And, you know, so another guy I always think of, and even though my perspective's changed on the running backs in terms of what where their worth is. And so Le'Veon Bell missed a season because he thought he was essentially worth wide receiver / running back, and he wasn't. And so Kittle, as much as I like him, and he's Gronk Jr., he still, to me, hasn't outplayed Gronk yet in any of his best years, of Gronk's best years. So trying to bring the market to $18 million, that's ridiculous.
Titans
make $10 million.
That's right. They do it again. Murray, as you just said, he's not Gronk, and Gronk got paid as a tight end. So it's too bad. I mean, I understand his argument, but it's amazing to me that these guys still make the mistake. It's like they still think it's about the product, you know, or the solely about the productivity. When, as you just said, go out on, you know what, go get covered by the best corner in the league, and lose some weight and see if you can beat the best corner in the league. If you're covered on every play, then we'll pay you as a wide receiver. I just don't think a lot of them can do that.
It's just not the way it works.
It isn't.
I mean, I'm a high-impact defensive tackle. I want to get paid like a pass-rushing defensive end. Sorry.
Right.
You're not. Then lose 30 pounds and go on the edge and beat the best, beat these great left tackles, play in, play out, coming off the edge, and then I'll pay you like a defensive end. You're not. You're a tackle, a safety, playmaking safety. I want to get paid like a corner. Then go play corner. You couldn't play corner. That's why you're at safety. You're too big and too slow to play corner, so we put you back here. And so, no. I'm not setting that precedent. Now, Murray, the thing about he's not Gronkowski, of course, no one is. But he still has the right to say, and again, because it's all timing, right? So, I mean, right now, Hunter Henry with the L.A. Chargers is the top paid tight end in the league based on AAV, 10-6. I don't know if he's the best tight end, but he was up. You know,
market dictates the value. So, yeah, Kittle should absolutely be the highest paid tight end. But to try to get, wide receiver money, I think that's ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, here, let me give it to you. Here are I'm just going by AAV. The highest paid tight ends in the game, one is Hunter Henry at 10-6. Number two is Austin Hooper. Maybe that's who I meant to say, really. Austin Hooper just signed in Cleveland for 10-5.
Correct.
Travis Kelce is third at 9-3.
Yep.
Gronkowski is fourth at 9. Tied with Kyle Rudolph at 9. Zach Ertz is 6 at 8.5. So, I mean, Kittle belongs in that category.
Yeah.
He belongs.
Give him 12.
Even if he's at 11 or 12, he's the highest paid ever. Fine, it's your turn. You're up. That's the way it works. He doesn't deserve to be in this category.
Highest paid AAV receiver in the league. I'm going to give you the name, and you tell me whether you would rather have this player or George Kittle. Okay?
Okay.
Number one, Julio Jones at 22.
Jones.
Kittle. I actually would take Kittle over Jones. Jones is too beaten up, beat up.
So listen, I need to separate what I think about number one wide receivers who I don't want on my team. Like, yeah. I don't, with just who's more valuable. Julio Jones is more valuable. Jones is more valuable. Second is Amari Cooper at 20.
I love Amari Cooper.
Kittle.
Cooper.
Yeah.
I go Cooper there too. It's not Cooper's fault that Prescott started to ignore him late in the year. Number three is Michael Thomas at 19.25.
Maybe.
Thomas.
Thomas definitely. Maybe the best receiver in the league.
My favorite receiver in the league. My favorite receiver in the league is Michael Thomas. Number four, Odell Beckham at 18.
The attitude gets in the way.
Kittle.
Kittle.
Beckham's got the ability.
You're taking too long.
Fine, Beckham.
To pass. You can pass. This isn't one of these hard and fast ones. You can pass if you want. I go Kittle over Beckham. Tyreek Hill at 18.
Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, Hill.
Hill. Yeah, it's a good number.
Game breaker.
It's a good number for Hill. Leaving out, you know, the cretin that he is. Number six, A.J. Green, 17.8.
Kittle.
Overpaid Kittle.
Mike Evans at 16.5.
Evans.
Kittle.
I think I go Kittle there. It's close. Those two are close. DeAndre Hopkins at 16.2.
Hopkins.
Tied with Brandon Cooks at 16.2.
Ugh.
Adam Thielen is the 10th highest paid receiver in the league at 16.
Little soft. I go Kittle.
Ooh, I like Thielen, though. I'll go Thielen.
I like Thielen, too. But I go Kittle. Jarvis Landry is 11th at 15.
Landry.
Devontae Adams is 12 at 14.5.
Adams.
Agreed. Stephon Diggs, 14.4. He's the 13th highest paid receiver.
Diggs. Love him.
Okay. Allen Robinson in Chicago, 14.
Kittle.
Alshon Jeffrey, 13 in Philly.
Kittle.
T.Y. Hilton, 13.
I like Hilton, but he's beat up. Hilton.
Manny Sanders is 17th highest paid receiver at $12 million.
Kittle.
Sanders.
Okay. Sanders I love, but he's getting a little long in the tooth there.
I suppose.
Okay, so now we're in the it's Emmanuel Sanders is 17th in AAV at $12 million. Then comes Larry Fitzgerald at 11.5, Keenan Allen at 11.2, Tyrell Williams with the Raiders at 11, Tyler Boyd, Sterling Shepard, Tyler Lockett all around 10. That to me is Kittle's range. And look, I'd rather have him than some of the guys I mentioned at the top, just because Odell Beckham's a pill and A.J. Green's soft. But for the most part, if he wants to ask for receiver money and I'm the Niners, I tell him to pound sand. Pound sand. I don't ever do that. I don't ever pay a guy who, you know, exceeds production at his position to the point where he wants to be paid at another position. Then go lose the weight or gain the weight and go play that position if you want that kind of money. That's the luck of the draw. And there's one more thing. Now, it hasn't really happened to Kittle yet, but I feel like it's a matter of time. Those tight ends get hurt.
Yeah.
They get hurt. You know, he only missed the two games last year. He played all 16 the year before. He only played, I guess he wasn't a full-time starter the year before. But Kittle plays that kind of style where he's taking guys on and he's taking on tacklers.
All a matter of time before it's a neck or a back injury and he's retiring by 29, 30, something like that.
Right? He's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's, and not that receivers are in perfect health, but I think there's a little less.
There's less contact, I feel like.
I just think there's less, you know, I think the tight ends you're asking for long-term injuries, short-term injuries, those guys take a beating. And so, no, we're going to pay you like a tight end, not a receiver.
They work the middle of the field, right? And this, you know, this is why they're effective, because they're matched up with linebackers and safeties. So it's a matchup thing. Kittle will end up being the highest paid player in the game, but he's not going to, tight end, but he's not going to get receiver money.
Okay, so there's your thought on George Kittle. I just had one there. If you want to weigh in on the crowd noise, by all means, I see you right there. We will get to you. Also, had a follow-up thought here on the Bruins and the, I read something about their return to play and their testing that sort of blew me away. I wasn't anticipating. We'll give you the details on that. And when we come back, this will be a dual rejoin. You'll see it on the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. We'll play the audio here on the radio side. And that is an old voice, an old friend of ours, who we haven't talked to in years and years and years. He had a very interesting take about the NHL's playoff format and the inclusion of one team in that NHL playoff format. So an old voice returns to Felger and Maz, and we come back and pick that up again with your calls right after these words.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for. It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, first of all, I'll start with the Canadians being in, all right? Let's get this out of the way right away, right? This news is great for the Montreal Canadiens. It's great for their fans. It's great for the radio station that I work for. It's great for me. It's great for my show. Now, personally, how do I feel about it? I think it's stupid. I think a team that lost 8 in a row at one point, on another occasion lost another 8 in a row, on another occasion lost 5 in a row, on another occasion lost 3 in a row, finished with 31 wins and 40 losses, has a chance at a play-in to make it to the playoffs, I think is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Now, having said all of that, right, these are exceptional times that call for an exceptional measures. There's a lot of things that I don't agree with, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter with what I agree with, what I don't agree with. I think I can speak for all of us when I say we all want hockey back. I think I can speak for all of us when I say the National Hockey League would want to have as many markets involved in the mix as possible, try and generate as much interest as possible, to try and generate the revenues that they want to generate, to try and make up for some of those lost revenues. And, you know, I'm at a point where I just want sports back. I want sports back more than I think it's actually stupid, if that makes sense to you.
That's our old friend Tony Marinaro at TSN Radio up in Montreal. Remember him, Maz?
Of course, yes.
Biggest Habs fan I know. Says letting the Montreal Canadiens into the NHL playoff field is dumb. Stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life, he said. Stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. But he says he wants sports back more than he feels it's stupid, which I agree 1,000%. And again, I started, you know, my whole thing was I'll take any format coming back except for one that allows the Montreal Canadiens back into the field. And then I gave up on it because we all have to have small personal sacrifices, and that was mine. You want to let Montreal in to get this thing done? Go ahead, let him in. Go ahead, let him in. And I'll just drop it. But if you want to go back to the core of it, the, you know, allowing in the 24th team out of 31 is freaking silly. Freaking silly.
Totally.
10 games under 500. Again, all those losing streaks that he pointed to. I just found it interesting coming from him. Did you have a thought, Murray?
Yeah, and it's stupid in that, you know, we're talking about, you know, the way that the draft is set up, too. I don't think that it's fair that a team like that was that bad still has an opportunity for the top three picks, too. Like Mads was saying last week, there should be a governor on that crap team. It should be one or the other. You make the playoffs, even though you shouldn't, and you get to play in it, and maybe you go far and knock off the Bruins like we're all terrified, or at least Mike and I are. Or you get to have the shot at the top draft pick, the top three. You shouldn't be able to do both.
Well, since they halved it, you know, if you get bounced in that little preliminary round, then you're in the lottery. If you're not, and if you advance to the playoffs, and you don't have a shot at that high draft pick, that's how they halved it. I'm, you know, again, no perfect solution there. I agree with you. The real injustice is if a team like Pittsburgh or Edmonton, you know, a top 10 NHL team that's just on the bubble of the preliminary round, so they're playing the preliminary round, if they get bounced, if Pittsburgh gets bounced and then ends up with the number one overall pick, that's what they have to avoid. Montreal was in the top 10 lottery picks anyway. So
exactly, right.
You know, they deserve that, but both? No. And so they have to buy. You have to, if you get bounced that little qualifier, then you're back in the lottery. And that's not even 100% either. But now we get into the nitty-gritty of those details. Here's the thing that blew me away about the NHL return. And this is Bill Daly, the assistant commissioner, speaking to the Associated Press over the weekend. He said, we'll have rigorous daily testing where players are tested every evening and those results are obtained before they would leave their hotel rooms the next morning.
I saw this, yeah.
So we'll know if we have a positive test and whether the player has to self-quarantine himself as a result of that positive test. It's expensive, he says, but we think it's really a foundational element of what we're trying to accomplish. So that was the quote, and then it was further reported that each test is going to cost $125. $125. And Commissioner Gary Bettman estimated that they will need between 25,000 and 35,000 tests to get through the playoffs. The price tag, he concedes, will be millions of dollars. But he says athletes have plenty of concerns about risking their health to get back to work, and regular testing is something players insisted on. $125 a pop? And they're going to test them every single night? Every player, every night?
Mm-hmm.
And does that mean, that's got to mean coaches, support staff, you know, stadium work? I'm like everyone in the bubble, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Holy crap, 125. So
It doesn't seem financially feasible.
Holy smokes. I didn't feel like it would be that. I thought that the testing they had would be, you know, akin to a pregnancy test. I mean, what does that cost? You know, at CVS or a, you know, a test strip, a urine strip, or you know, something like that. That, you know,
$20-$30 top, something like that.
It's just a disposable $7 item or whatever. I mean, I'm not even sure what those costs are. Thankfully, the Wood hasn't had to test herself for pregnancy in quite some time. But it's like 125 beans every night per player, per coach, per trainer, per locker room attendant, per, I mean, holy moly, for 24 teams. So this is, so tying back into Montreal being let back into the bubble, like that's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands for a team that shouldn't be in the playoffs. Like that's sort of the equation there, I think.
Okay, but at the risk of being the complete dink in this conversation, so what? I mean, it's really not that much money. When you're, and I'm not in the real world, it is, but not in the pro sports world. So I did the math, and I picked 30,000 tests, and the number comes out to $3.75 million. I mean, what was the name of the winger that the Bruins had that they got rid of, the Bielski?
Yeah,
how much did he make?
Right.
So like, and this is the whole league. And the other thing is, it starts out as 24 teams, but it obviously goes down as you get deeper into the playoffs. This is sort of the Brian Burke argument, you know, he was talking about guys being away from home and the length of time they'd have to be in quarantine, but it's the same idea. The number will be cut in half every round.
Oh, you're right.
So, yeah, so look, honestly, I don't think there's any other way to do it. I think you have to test everybody every day. I think that's the only way you can do it, because sooner or later, someone's going to pop up right away. And we all know the incubation period with this thing could last up to 2 weeks. So, I think it's honestly, all things weighed out, to get back on the ice and to make money, I think it's a small price to pay.
So it's weird. 3.75 doesn't sound like a big number to me when you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars at stake for the TV money, right? Like that, the 3.75 feels to me like a reasonable number. Yeah, do
sure.
It. I don't know why, maybe because I'm cheaper. Like I think that, but $125 per test, like that number makes me jump out of my seat more than the 3.75 for some way my brain works. But I mean, I just didn't think they were that individually that expensive. But I guess they are. Okay, so be it. There's that thought. Back to your phones on everything. The crowd noise, the Kittle contract, this. Tim and Weymouth on the fake crowd noise. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, just a quick alternative to pumping in crowd noise. And I'm thinking specifically about the NBA. This would work the best. Why not just let the music in the arena go during action? You know, the players don't have to sit there and play in silence, and it's something that fills the ambient noise in the background without piping in fake crowd noise.
Oh, they will. They will. A lot of teams do it as it is when they have the ball. Well, it's either, you know, I mean, whatever. There's a million of them. Everybody clap your hands. Or, you know, I mean, never mind the defense chant, or they'll play like a Dr. Dre riff when you're on offense. Like, they'll amp that up. The squeaking on the floor is, I don't know if that's palatable. So I mean,
it's
tedious, right? So I mean, so I'll take music. Don't give me fake crowd noise. And in hockey, I would just let it go, because I think the sounds of that game are, I don't know, I like it. It's not the same as those sneakers on the floor, which is gets jarring. Hockey.
As, As long as they shut up that guy in Detroit who yells out, Detroit basketball, that guy, shut his ass up, I'm good.
Anthony in Boston on Kittle. Go ahead, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I just wanted to get your take on George Kittle's blocking. I agree that he shouldn't get, you know, receiver money, but you got to put a price tag on his blocking. I mean, he's a beast. And he's pancaking guys, and he's in every play that he's in.
Okay, so what's the price tag for a blocking tight end?
Also makes him more susceptible to injury, so you got to factor that in. As we're talking about, you know, he goes over the middle anyway, and if he's like baby Gronk, he's going to, you know, continue to take a beating, and he blocks as well. So, I don't know. I factor that in. So
well,
like,
no.
Okay.
I factor that into his tight end salary.
Right,
so,
yeah.
So again, you want to be the highest paid tight end in the league? Because you block so well? Done.
13 and a half, then.
Done.
How about that?
Okay, so you block well. Well, no, the highest paid guy now is 10 and a half. Here's 11 and a half because you block well. But I'm not paying you like Julio Jones when you're a tight end. I don't care how well you block.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, really? Like, so what do they want? What does he want? He want to be paid like a receiver and a left tackle?
Exactly.
Like, is that the idea? How much money they're going to give him? He's going to get, I'd say, tops 12. Because we all know Gronk was a phenomenal blocker, and he didn't get it. And say what you want about Kittle. He's a fabulous player, and he's the best tight end in the league right now, maybe, other than the possible case of Kelsey, although Kittle certainly, I think, is a better blocker and more physical than Kelsey.
He is. Oh, I'd rather have Kittle than Kelsey.
But neither one was Gronk in his prime. Neither one. And so Gronk wasn't going to get it, independent of what the actual number was. If they weren't going to pay Gronk like a receiver, they're not paying this guy.
More your phones. Right back to it after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Mads.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it.
All right, back to your phones. As promised here, Felger and Mads on a re-entry Monday. Steve in New Hampshire on that testing in the NHL. Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys, long time, first time. I recently got tested for COVID-19, and with the kind of the rules and the regulations about the, you know, testing every day. So what I learned is that you don't necessarily, when you get tested, you kind of need to do it like 4 or 5 days after you were in a situation where you could have caught it. So for my example, I had to fly. I had to stay in a hotel. I had to come back. I called up for a test, said I didn't have any symptoms, but I wanted to get tested, so I had to quarantine for my family.
Okay, Steve.
And what I learned is that I tested too soon. I was only back for 3 days. The test wouldn't have done anything.
Got it. Understood. What do you think of that, Maz? Did you follow that?
I did, but he's missing the point. These guys are going to be together every day. So even if they're... Even if there is a lag period, and what he's talking about is that incubation period that we know it's 4 to 14 days or whatever it was, 5 to 14 days. And so let's say the players are first exposed to one another on Monday. Well, you're still going to test them starting Friday on every day. So, his point is largely irrelevant as it pertains to guys who are together every day and in competitive environments. It doesn't matter. They got to test him every day. Every day, because who knows when it might show up or they come in contact with someone or something that, you know, exposes them to the illness. And then now you've got a potential team-wide issue on your hand and league-wide issue on your hand. So they need to be able to act swiftly. So they have to test daily.
Sorry, I was sorry to interrupt your chips there or your peanuts. What do you got there, Mess?
Yeah, what's going on there?
It's beef and broccoli.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Just go ahead. You can go back to eating. Here's Dave in Boston. Hi, Dave. What do you got?
Hey, I know you guys are talking like baseball and hockey and basketball, but I'm thinking like big picture here. I want your honest opinion, all three of you, Marty, you two. Do you honestly think that there are going to be no fans in the stadiums or do you think there's going to be half or full for the NFL season? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think in some locations, in some cities, in some states, there's going to be fans in the stands. And, you know, not full stadiums.
I think you'll see 15 to 20. So these most of these places hold 75,000, 80,000. I think you'll see 15,000, 20,000 fans in some of those stadiums. Here, you'll probably see no one.
Right, no one here. But in Florida, like, they're already at Pro Players or whatever they call it, Hard Rock Stadium down there in Miami. They're already mapping out a plan and a grid, and, like, they've got it all mapped out for 15 to 20,000 stands, fans in the stands. Like, they're definitely going to do that.
And didn't the Texas governor announce last week, too, that it's like, yeah, come on down, starting now.
Yes. Like, yeah. And I think even in, you know, places like Ohio and Michigan, where you have football, I'm talking college football now, 100,000-seat stadiums,
yeah.
You know, there is some room in there. Where you can put 20,000 people in those stadiums in social distance. And so I think you're going to see that to start, and that's the plan. Now, if there's a second wave or, you know, relapse, you know, then everybody's out, and who knows, maybe they'll shut them all back down again. But I think that's the working plan. You'll have some fans in the stands. And I'm curious about just more the NBA in this bubble. And when they go to Disney World, they'll be playing some small little places. And if they do let in families, or they do, you know, they are going to have people in a bubble where support workers, stadium workers, Disney World employees, you know, put them in these little arenas. I mean, all you need is maybe 1,000 people to create a little bit of atmosphere. I had read, you know, a couple of weeks ago that they were considering doing that. As long as everyone's tested and it is a bubble, put them in there. You know, it's better than that having to listen to, again, Detroit basketball, right?
Yeah.
Give me some people in there.
Definitely. I'll take any kind of fans in the arena, however small the crowd, I'll take it.
Jennifer in Salem. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I love your show, and I wanted to add to your conversation about the testing of the virus for sports. I want sports to come back more than anybody. I love watching sports, and at the same time, it makes me really frustrated as a public school teacher to hear the amount of money that they're willing to spend on testing for a team is pretty much equivalent to the amount that we are having our budget.
Jennifer, your phone's just breaking up, but I understand your feelings on that. Our priorities are in the wrong place.
But they always have been.
But they always have been, right? And that's sort of what we deal with. I mean, but that it's I understand why someone who works in the public sector or someone who works at a school teacher would be frustrated that they're going to, you know, spend $125 a test a day for every single NHL player. And spend almost $4 million to test NHL players just so they could finish the playoffs. And there's not proper testing for health workers, school teachers, et cetera. Yep. Yep. I understand your frustration. I have no suitable response to you. I don't know if you do, Maz, but...
No, look, again, it's we all know what the most important jobs in a society are and where the greatest value comes from and things like that. And it's warped. It's always been warped. So my only answer to her, and I'm not disagreeing with her, I just think it's always been that way. So whether we're spending the money on the money on the testing or we're building a stadium for teams, or what's the difference? The money's all going towards entertainment and not to real core issues.
I mean, I doubt it's sufficient for you as a school teacher, but they did shut the schools down. And I don't think it's going to be normal in the fall. And I don't think it's going to be normal again in school until there's vaccines and that testing and the things that you're talking about. So, I mean, there is that, if that's any consolation. I would also say this about sports. We do put extra emphasis on them, and they are important to us. You know, to the point where when one of our teams does really well, they shut the city down for the day and we have a parade. So that's how we know that they treat those teams and those jobs differently than others. So if you're going to put them on that pedestal and treat them like that when they do well, then I don't mind them being prioritized a little bit to come back. I don't. I've said that from day one. If you want to give those guys a test before you give me a test, that's fine. I'm not going to be outraged. Give them a test before, a hospital worker, a school teacher, and that's a different story. That's a different story. But they can take the test before me, as far as I'm concerned, Maz.
Well, look, so the and we've had this discussion before, but the teams provide a certain amount of, you know, morale, civic pride, things like that. And I'm not telling you those are, you know, number one on the list, but I think that those are things that do have value. And if you need any proof of that, I think we could use a little of it right now. So, and again, I'm not telling you that, again, it's the most important thing for any of us. But I think that everybody, you know, there's a distraction there. It makes people feel better when their teams are winning. For whatever reason, there is that connection. It's bizarre as all hell. And in this market, it's as strong as any market in America, if not the world. So, you know, that we do treat it as having a level of importance. There's no doubt about it. Maybe we're wrong to do that. But the fact is that we do.
Nathan in the car. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going? Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to comment, Felger, you said that regarding like your sticker shock with the price of the testing.
Yes.
It's not, you know, and correct me if I'm pretty sure because I used to work in healthcare. It's not necessarily the price of the test kit itself. It's more the fact that you have to have a healthcare professional administer the test. Then you have to send it to the lab. Then the lab fees are included for the testing. Then the reports that come out.
Yep.
Like if you go get your cholesterol tested, you know, you're not paying the 50 cents for the needle. You're paying $500 for the lab's time. So I think that's where the sticker shock kind of goes up a little bit. Just wanted to mention that.
Yep, I got it. I got it. I do think, though, when the league's first thought of daily testing, they're players to get them back on the field or the ice months ago now. We're 3 months into this thing. But when that was originally thought, like I thought I had read Maz, and I thought the thought was that it would be as easy as a pregnancy test. I just keep going back to that. You'd pee on a strip and it would give you a, you know, and it would sort of be a disposable
swipe a swab type thing.
Really, yeah. Affordable item that you would almost, you know, at some point, not that we'd be able to do it, but it would be akin to this.
Yeah.
You walk into the CVS and buy a pack of them of 20 for $14 and there's your, you know, they're your test strip. And that's what they would be doing. Like everything has surprised me.
Right.
I didn't know you'd be at a place where they'd be doing daily testing, but there'd be lab. It'd be sent to the lab every single night for $125 a pop. I did not envision that.
Yeah.
Well, so you know what? I'm sorry, Murray. Go.
Shame on me for being the internal pessimist here, but maybe it's just that the pharmaceutical industry stepped in and said, oh, no. We've got money to make here, so we need to gouge, and make as much as we possibly can.
Well, there's definitely that. And now that I think of it, I haven't, you know, weeks ago, we talked about that rapid test that was allegedly supposed to be able to give positive results in as quickly as 15 minutes or 5 minutes and a negative in 15 or whatever it was. Right. So I wonder whether that's related to what the NHL is doing. It just feels like, I don't know, are they going to be able to run them out to labs every night? Is that what they're going to be doing, or are they going to be doing them on site? You know, to me, that feels like something they would do on site with that volume of testing.
Coming up next in our long commercial-free segment, Murray's favorite story from the week, as if any would qualify, as if there was anything that to say you were, you had a favorite anything this weekend.
There was one small bright spot.
Okay, Murray had one small little glimmer of hope. We'll give you that right after these words.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Complaining.
Oh, you had a mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No. It's always no.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
One of these little motherfucking white boys didn't know where he was going and broke my fucking window in my truck. Broke my shit. This wasn't no this is a residential area. This wasn't no stores over here. No, none of that. Broke my window. I chased him down and whooped his ass. So if the footage come out and y'all see it, I chased him down and whooped his ass. He broke my window. This ain't no hate crime. I ain't got no problem with nobody ain't got a problem with me. It's a problem with the motherfucking system. That's it. The motherfucker broke my window and I whooped his ass. He didn't know who window he broke. And he got his ass whooped. Just so y'all see it later, I'm telling y'all now.
All right, so this was Murray's favorite story of the weekend. Again, hard weekend to have a favorite story about anything. But Murray had one. So tell us what that was. J.R. Smith. Murray, tell us the story.
Yeah, so he reacted, I think, how most rational, sane people would have when a guy was trying to get into his car, try to attempt to smash and grab, destroy his property. He put his 17-foot-inch foot in his ass is what he did. And, you know, he took matters in his own hands, which it feels like, unfortunately, is probably going to end up having to be the case here going forward for all of us. Well, what the hell is he supposed to do? Go ahead and wreck my car? I'll just watch? Take it? Sure? No. J.R. Smith reacted the way that I think most rational people would. He took matters into his own hands. Because that kind of destruction, and I said it earlier to start the show, it's not like we've done a lot of this today, and I think most, you know, it's exhausting and just a brutal topic. Like, the death of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd, the anger there, I am with you. I am 100% with you. I understand it. But the wanton destruction we've seen, the burning of cities, the destruction of other people's property like this, that guy tried breaking into J.R. Smith's car. He was not protesting the death of George Floyd. He wasn't. That scumbag is trying to smash and grab, and it's I got to get mine-ism. And I have no tolerance for that. I don't. And I'm not going to apologize for that because you can be appalled by both things. I think it's okay. And it's for what? Like this kid that you look at, just based on looking at him, the one that J.R. Smith rightfully beat. Oh, it what? Because, oh, you're mad about the corporations, man. I got to get mine-ism. Like, get the hell out of here with this. So good for J.R. Smith. It was about the only smile I had all weekend.
Did you have a thought, Maz?
Well, look, again, I mean, it's just a proof. Violence breeds violence, right? And so when you get someone trashing someone's car and acting like a complete a-hole, for lack of a better word, what do you think's going to happen to you? I mean, it's hard to have, you know, hard to have any compassion for the guy breaking into the car or smashing the windshield, really. But regardless, who then gets his ass kicked by the owner? I mean, like, what are you doing? So, you're acting like an asshat, and you're going to get treated like an asshat. So, to me, I don't, the response is hard to fathom. At the same time, I understand the frustration. I'm sort of with Murray on that. And frustration's not even the right word. The anger. I mean, the number of incidents that we've had between white policemen and African-American civilians is ridiculously high. And they're too many to number at this stage. It's infuriating. And frankly, it's embarrassing to be an American. It's embarrassing to be a white American. It's all of these things because the complaints and the anger over it is 100% justified.
So just a small little quibble. It's hard to take J.R. Smith, you know, seriously. This is not a serious man. This is not, he's just not, I'm sorry. I think he's a clown. And I don't condone violence in any form. You know, smash out my car window. I mean, I really wish you wouldn't do that. I'm pissed at you. I'm not going to whoop your ass. Like, but that's just me. Different people handle things differently. You mess with your car. I get it. And the guy, you know, the kid's okay, right? It's not like he got hurt or anything.
From my understanding, yeah. It's not like he's...
I mean, he ran... He got up and ran away.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's fine. But, you know, Smith made a point, said this ain't no hate crime. You know, Smith said in the video he wanted to make it clear that his retaliation wasn't because the man was white. Yet, if you hear the very beginning of the clip, Jimmy, would you just re-rack the clip?
Yes, I know what you... Because I felt the same way about this.
Go ahead.
One of these little motherfucking white boys...
Okay, one of these, like, that doesn't help, JR. I just got to tell you, I'm fine. I know where you're coming from. Your head's sort of in the clouds anyway. You don't really mean anything by it. You're just sort of talking in the vernacular, I guess, or whatever. Like, I'm not going to get all outraged at you. I personally know where you're coming from. I know you don't mean anything by it. You're just sort of talking. But believe me.
There are people that would, yeah.
You because in these insanely polarized, stupid times, you understand now that the other side is going to use that. See, it's Ray. He called him a mother bleeping white boy. And that you just sort of undercut your whole thing by bringing up his race immediately. It's the first thing you said about him. It's how you describe it, you know? So it's like, I'm telling you, the other side of it is going to take that and say, see, and this is what this has become, and this is why this is so frustrating, because there is no center. The center has not held. There is no center, even though the center is big and wide and obvious. We've become so polarized and hate each other so much that nothing is accepted from either side. You just go to your corner and fire away. And so the other side, JR, is going to go to their corner and fire away at the point, at the fact that you immediately said the mother bleeping white boy. And you just sort of undercut your whole thing among those people. And that's just, I don't know. Maz, you noticed it too.
Oh, right away. Right away. As soon as I heard the clip, I said, well, you know, how do you, you sort of contradict yourself right out of the gate. You know, it's not a hate crime, but. You know, so now again, I sort of look, Mike, I'm not for violence either. There are times, though, where I would say it's unavoidable. I don't know that this is necessarily one of those cases. Right. And when I say that, if
someone broke out your car window, Maz, would you chase him down the street and beat him up?
No, I wouldn't. But if someone hit my wife or one of my kids and tried to do them harm, I probably would.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Right. So but my point is there are occasions.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
there are,
yes,
like
yes.
I don't want to say that there are none because I don't think that is right. But I also sort of operate under the premise of, well, look, we're in a highly charged time politically and racially, clearly. And on top of it, we are having a pandemic. If you decide to go and bash in the window of another human being and he turns out to be of the opposite color, and in this case, you're the white guy, you deserve to get your ass kicked. Now look, nothing happened to this guy, but my point is you're sort of asking for it because it's not exactly the most prudent decision in the world in the first place.
Well, I think you're asking for it, period. I mean, if you're just going to wantonly destruct someone's property, you're asking for it.
Right. Like, if there's repercussions, what did you expect?
So, but again, not that I condone it. Like, I wouldn't, I don't condone physical violence unless you absolutely are necessary. But if you're going to screw around like that and wantonly destroy someone's property, then you are sort of, you are asking for it. And so both sides of it, right? I mean, like, I get both sides of it. I just think J.R. Smith sort of undercuts himself with that very first line, and there are people who will use it against him.
Well, if nothing else, as the internet was quick to point out, though, May 31st, that has now been dubbed J.R. Smith Day because 2 years ago to the day is when he dribbled out like an idiot against the Golden State Warriors.
I was just going to mention that. Yeah. It was the same date.
Yeah, it was.
To me, LeBron should have whooped his ass. That to me, if anyone deserved it, ass whooping, it was that thing. Like, this is, Maz, this is one of the biggest clowns in pro sports.
No question, which hurts his credibility in the story.
Right, like,
because he is, he's a complete ass clown. He's a total hack. I mean, he really is. He's just a stooge. So, but that said, he is a human being. And, you know, he reacted with a human emotion, but it does hurt his credibility in the story. No two ways about it.
Okay, you want to weigh in on this or anything else we've hit on today? By all means, the phones are open at 617-779-0985. We'll reset some of our top thoughts of the day after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.